/calendar or by calling 212-777-6028. That's the WBAI Resistance Calendar for the week ending Saturday, May 26th. I'm Jesse Lent.
I wish they'd hurry up with that transmission. I want to go to bed.
I suggest that you reach deep down inside yourself there and try and find something that'll keep you awake just a little while longer, because this transmission coming up may just rekindle your will to live.
los ojos, Maya Queta.
Feels like times have changed, 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 changed,
Night shift.
Valley Forge, Berkshire, Sequoia. Valley Forge, Berkshire, Sequoia.
This is Tom Central. Channel open for Executive Order AUC-3423. Listen to this, boys.
Where are my people? my people. Now, where are my people? Now, where are my people? 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 Where are my people?
Hi, this is Valley Forge, Berkshire, Sequoia. Valley Forge, Berkshire, Sequoia.
This is Valley Center. Channel open for executive order AC3423. Listen to this voice.
How long has it been since you've slept?
I don't know. Funny. I never seem to get tired. But I know I haven't slept since this thing began.
Right, Were you going deep into the DGM there?
Yes. What I really enjoyed.
What did you enjoy?
The early opening of the show, because we really went old school. Ooh, I mean, we went kind of way back to a period where a lot of people have forgotten with the kind of Frank Sinatra and, orchestra.
The orchestra. Oh, you like that.
I was really going for that. And then you changed up, of course.
Of course. I went
African. Shifting into gears.
Yes, I did. Yes, I did.
So that I went for the ride.
And so you were along for the ride.
Oh, my goodness.
And you know who's the stowaway?
Who?
The mystery guest.
Oh, no. Well, you see, I've been out on assignment the last couple of weeks.
She's like the Dr. Smith character. You know, in the new Lost in Space, Dr. Smith is a woman. Did you know that?
Yeah.
You knew that? Yeah. Have you watched it?
I did. I watched a couple episodes. It's very interesting.
Parker Posey.
Because I was in love with the...
The old Dr. Smith.
The
old
Lost
in Space. Oh, you love that.
The old cast.
Lost
Penny,
in Space.
I was in love with Penny. Come on. She was America's...
I met Penny.
She was America's sci-fi sweetheart.
I met Penny the 60th anniversary of...
Wow! I'm impressed.
Sound of Music. They were all there except for Christopher Plummer.
Wow.
Yes.
Good.
Yes, good, pretty good. Anyway, so, Mr. Guest, you were enjoying that music?
Oh, that music? Yeah.
Well, just the DGM music.
Yeah.
Well, now, here's the thing, Byron. Now, you know we're in the marathon.
Yes.
Okay, and here's what we've got on deck. Okay. First of all, you're tuned to listener-sponsored radio, WBAI 99.5 FM in New York. The name of the show...
Night Shift.
...is Night Shift. We're on from midnight till 3 a.m. on Mondays... And it's an eclectic mix. It's a late night magazine where life is like science fiction.
And you know, when I'm out on assignment, I get a chance to be with the people.
Like when you're on a music assignment or a film or a theater assignment, Byron? What do you mean? What kind of assignment?
It's, quote,
grant writing
assignment? End quote.
See, the research I have to do for
research
the
assignment.
Show.
Research?
Yes, research.
Research?
This is the grant that we got.
Oh, so what kind of research are you doing on your assignment?
Byron goes out on assignment.
On assignment. Kind of a research assignment.
So anyway,
here's the deal. Here's what's
happening. So, when Byron's on assignment.
With all the stuff that's happening, it's like science can, life can, and science are almost merging together. They're running so fast.
Who are you telling? Who are you?
Oh, my God.
Listen to the show. Yeah. Listen, life has become exactly like... you know, I don't even have to look for weird stories anymore.
Is that because we're living in a virtual reality?
Are you trying to tell me that life is like science
fiction?
Fiction.
Fiction.
Now, Byron, can I tell you what we're going to do?
Really?
Okay. We've got the DGM.
Yes.
Wait.
We got the DGM.
This music?
All of this music is part of the DGM.
The music we're listening to?
Everything we've heard for the last 20 minutes.
And the music we were just listening to? The music from before?
Correct. All part of the DGM.
And so this...
Now, here's the deal. With
volume
the DGM,
is 3 a.m.?
DGM.
The music... Wait, since midnight?
Since midnight.
When were we... When did we...
We started
start playing
at
music at midnight.
DGM,
right. You can give her the cliff notes.
I wrote it down.
But
them?
I want for those who are listening who may want to pledge, understand, who may have enjoyed that music and said, wow, I would like to get that music too.
I would too.
And so what I would say is that you have to make a phone call.
Yes.
All you have to do is call
546.
No, what's your problem?
Pledge. Excuse
me. I'm sorry.
Me?
You're right.
Just because I've been on assignment doesn't mean
I understand.
Neglect
516.
Thank you.
516.
620.
3602.
That's the number to pledge.
That's the number to pledge. And here's what it is. For $35, you can get the Spring DGM. And DGM stands for Damn Good Music.
Correct.
Okay. String DGM Connection, it's almost 80 tracks. And I went back and I added, from when I first offered this a couple weeks ago, I added sort of a African DGM. I threw some African DGM in there.
DGM?
Yes, I have some African DGM. I'll play some of it to you.
Now, is this DGM Spring 2018?
Mm-hmm. DGM Spring 2018. Now you can go to the Night Shift Facebook page. You can just click there. You can go to online, give2wbai.org. And you can get
all 80 tracks.
All 80 tracks. For a $35 pledge, we send you the CD free.
Oh, my goodness.
Yes.
And how soon can you get it if you make your pledge?
You make your pledge, you get it right away. It's here. I have it here. I'm going to be giving it to the premiums person, and they'll be able to mail it out within days.
All right, so here's what we do. You pick up the phone.
Pick up the phone.
You dial 516-620-3602.
Did you get that, Mr. Guest?
My goodness.
Yeah, I got that. Okay.
I got the message. Dial. So come on, pick up the phone, make a pledge.
Make
help
a pledge.
Support us, help sustain radio free. That's how we maintain.
Well, radio free speech radio.
Free speech radio.
Free speech radio. We're not being paid to say anything that we say.
Right.
We have no corporate sponsors
and
to answer to.
And the DGM is what?
We answer. DGM is $35.
Wow.
That's it. All these tracks, this is over 5 hours of music.
516.
And this, now, I've gone African for a reason because we have another premium. But just listen to this. This is on the collection.
Yes.
Tell me you don't want this for the cookout this summer.
Wait. By the river?
It's impressive.
Yes. Now, do you want to know why
we've gone with the
African theme?
Please.
There's a reason, because, and I'll go back to the thing you liked at the beginning here. There's an interview with the director of a very interesting film called Pastor Paul.
I saw that.
You saw that?
Yes.
Okay, well, first, Byron, let's get Byron's review. Now, here's what's fascinating about Pastor Paul. It's got a fascinating backstory. It's an interesting story. It's about a white student. Who travels to
mathematician.
Africa, to a mathematician who travels to Ghana to study the rhythmic patterns of you know, native music, and he happens to get asked to appear in a film because, as you know, Nollywood is huge. There's lots of films being made there all the time. And he goes and he agrees to be in the film, to play this Pastor Paul. But something happens to him. So you're laughing, Byron. So what it went out? Just giving away just the premise. So he becomes possessed, basically. Or did he?
I would say that the movie
possessed.
Was that, as well as spiritual awakenings.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Because
that is absolutely.
He was possessed.
The redemptive part of moving from one change to another. Remember this, psychologically, is always about where it breaks.
Yes.
Where you stop. And you stop being stupid, I guess you can call it, to be smarter.
Yes.
And when you go through that passage where there's always some transition. Now, this particular movie tries to share with you the transition moment so that it's redemptive. It's reforming.
Yes.
You know, and it shows you a piece of an attempt to merge cultures at a place where you can have a conversation intellectually, spiritually. And, of course, it goes to the dark side.
Yes, it does go to the dark side. Yes, it does.
So, I mean, that's did I give it justice?
You did a very good. That was very good, Brian. It was very good. You're hired. Well, it's an interesting film on many levels. I got a chance to talk to the writer-director, who's also the star.
Yes.
And you know, along with a number of the other actors are actually musicians, you know, well-known musicians down there. So it's a very interesting...
Over there.
Over there, I should say.
Yes.
Not even down there. Over there. Over there.
You know what I found interesting?
What did you find interesting?
Reading the credits, some of that... I recognize that there are two of the characters in his... piece that are whose names are Rosencrantz and
Guildenstern. Yes, you noticed that. Yes, of course you did.
So, but I mean, because that's that sensibility of having it there is just as important as if it wasn't there, then it wouldn't be reflective of an entire community.
Exactly.
So I accept.
Exactly. You understood. Yeah. You got all the.
It was
all
sneaky.
Yes, he was.
Snuck that in there.
Yes, he snuck that in there. Well, I'm going to play you a little bit of an interview with Jules, who's the director of the film. But I asked him basically what made him come up with this concept for a film. Now, Mr. Guest, you've seen the film as well. What were your thoughts? Like, what did you like about the film? Because we're going to talk about it later.
Okay, first of all, can you put my sound up a little bit? Because I usually speak low.
Okay.
And I want to be able to hear myself, and other people might want to hear me too. So what are my thoughts on the film? My thoughts on the film are that everyone needs to see this film.
First of all,
it's highly entertaining. It's funny. Seriously. I mean, if you are not the kind of dude or gal who wants to go see the funniest comedy sitcom and laugh about the funny things there, you might want to kind of pick up a book, read something satirical or something very flavorful. And I mean, you might watch like late night TV. You might watch late night shows or something like that. You might have like a sense of humor that's a little dark, a little, you know, what do they call it? Black comedy?
Dark.
We'll let it go. What is it called?
Okay, dark humor?
It's probably better politically correct to say dark.
What's politically comedy. Correct? Please tell me.
Dark comedy.
Dark comedy.
Considered correctly.
Yeah.
Well, you know, different
comedy,
cultures
but
have
they
different...
don't mean a black comedy.
Yeah,
black comedy
yeah,
is not a black
it's,
comedy.
You know, I think in Europe they, you know, call
all right,
it
but you're
one thing.
You're out on a limb here.
You've got
to bring this back
in
so
any
we
case,
are, we're following you.
But I think she's right. There is humor in
this humor
piece.
Is smart. It's very smart. It's very smart. It's stylistic, exactly. And it's subtle. It's minimal. It doesn't bite you in the face. It just kind of like sinks in, and you're like, wow. And you can watch the movie a couple times and be like, wow. And it's so subtle. It's great. It's beautiful. And you kind of feel like you're watching a documentary, and that it's almost a mockumentary in a way. But it's not.
And the one thing that I really appreciated also is that it had a chance to stick to detail. So it fit in and seamlessly made it part of the milieu without being overly visible to just attract him as the just walking through. It was very collectively.
Each
scene.
Talk about it.
Crafted.
And these are three major musicians who basically got together and made a film. In this sort of political, global,
yes.
You know, international. You know, intercontinental kind of way, and made this movie about this dynamic and, you know, this artistic kind of vision making.
Yes, because it's very jarring, because they ask you to come into their world.
Yes, they do.
And you are focused in on a couple of stories that kind of say, okay, if you
how do these going to connect?
That's
yes.
Right. If you appreciate the threads, you see how it's coming together, and ultimately at the end, it makes very good sense. But it is a style that will give you another notion on filmmaking.
I agree, and it's
and
interesting.
The way to tell the story.
It's interesting because I got to talk to him, and we talked about pretty much a lot of that. But I do want to say thankfully IndiePix Films is donated DVDs. Of the film, which has just come out this spring on DVD for the first time. So this film is a new film. It's in a festival run. It's gotten acclaim, and it's just coming out. And they were nice enough to donate copies for us. And check it out, okay?
Yes.
Only $25 pledge.
It.
Yes.
$25
that's
pledge?
A $25
excuse
pledge.
Me.
That's
oh, wow.
Right. You can go to the Facebook page right now. Just click a link. There's a link right there on the page. You get the DVD.
Besides that, what do you get?
Well, you get to know that you're supporting public radio. You're supporting Night Shift. You're supporting free speech radio. You're supporting something, hopefully, that means something to you.
Is there a...
do you continue to get free speech radio?
Is there
radio?
A package deal to get both?
Get both what, DGM? Well, yeah, the package too. Deal is $60. Yeah, there you go. $60. Get the DGM.
$60 and Pastor Paul for only $60. That's it. That's it. Tell
me.
Only $60. You get Pastor Paul
it's well and worth DGM.
Wait. Pastor Paul.
Yes.
You get it on DVD.
And
DVD.
And 80 tracks of a spring 2018 volume one of
the Pastor Paul
it's over 80 tracks.
Is the soundtrack included on the DGM?
You guys are going to confuse.
No, I'm saying let's sell the package for $60. So
get, all right, $60 package. You get the Pastor Paul DVD and you get the DGM.
And is any of the Pastor Paul music included in the DGM?
No.
We
didn't. Why not?
Because we didn't get the rights for
the DVD. You can get the DVD.
Now, if they want to buy either or.
All right.
Either or. If you want to get just the DGM, okay, that's $35 pledge.
Yes.
Spring DGM 2018. Yes. If you want the Pastor Paul DVD, yes, all you have to do is pledge $25. And if you're not convinced yet, take a listen to me talking to the director about what he did. Yes. And again, he's clearly an artist. He had a vision. And that's what I asked him. I said, you know, how did you come up with this?
Did he sing to you too?
I had a project that got me started, which was a web series I did in New Orleans. And while I was living, I lived down there for a year and a half working on that. When it was done, it had done just well enough that I was able to help convince people to crowdfund a film project for me. And I had this idea after reading an article about a white guy who got cast in an Hollywood film that this character should become possessed and his life should turn into a Hollywood film, and immediately knew that was the kind of film I could maybe make in a really scrappy way without much experience, partly because I had really talented friends in the arts industry and in music and film in Ghana already. I asked them if they were interested in doing it, and they were.
Because your film is such an interesting and unique kind of story, you know, it's part fable, it's part thriller in a way, it's part, I wouldn't call it horror, but it's supernatural, it's part comedy in some ways. What would be your pitch for this film?
My pitch was always that it was a comedy. I always knew that I wanted to do a lot of that genre mixing stuff, and I knew that just inherently in the way we were going to make it, it was going to have a very documentary feel sometimes. But I knew that the way I wanted to frame it to everyone involved was it's a comedy. Like, this is meant to be funny, even though it's not necessarily going to make you laugh out loud the whole time. To me, the whole thing is funny.
I know it's a challenge to shoot a film with very little money. It's a challenge to shoot a film, you know, in another country where you don't necessarily know what resources you're going to have complete access to. It's challenging to shoot a film where you need the collaboration of other people and you hope everybody gets what you're doing. But you also, you wrote it, you directed it, and you're the star. So tell me about the challenge of both directing, producing, and being in a film in a foreign country with just you and a cameraman.
I mean, there are a lot of funny stories about us in situations that were certainly precarious, but in general, I can't thank Adam about it enough for being behind the camera when I couldn't be, because for so much of the film, I could not be. And even though, like, it was, I started acting as a kid. The first thing I did was acting, and I hadn't done it in a very long time, and it was really fun to prepare to do this role. And knowing I was going to be directing and acting at the same time, I took a lot of care and preparation beforehand in thinking about the performance so that it could be a sort of mode I could switch into when I had to. And in a sense, it became such a mode, I forced a sort of categorical boundary between myself and the role that, like, I remember telling Adam towards the end of the time we were shooting it that I felt like the character itself was a third person with us on this adventure who I was really sick of spending time with.
I understand that. Well, tell me a little bit about creating this character, because, you know, clearly you as a musician, I would think, could relate somewhat to this character you created, because a lot of music is based on math and mathematical progressions. And, you know, that's just something that is intrinsic to writing music. And especially, as your character points out, you know, listening to rhythms, you know, not only in Africa, but in other countries as well. Tell me a little bit about your decision to make him this kind of character and how that informed the story as it developed.
Yeah, well, so I wanted to have, I mean, when I went to Ghana, I went to study music, and I wasn't there to study traditional drumming. I was there to study contemporary music, but I knew, like almost everyone you told, as a like white tourist in Ghana, I'm here to study music. They were like, oh, so you want to learn traditional drumming, right? Because that's what a lot of people come for. Like in terms of the tourism industry there, that's a big section of it. And that was always like a funny thing to me, that those characters were of a certain type, a type that I totally get along with well. And I love having conversations about traditional drumming of various kinds, something I spent a lot of time reading about, thinking about while I was there, and writing about at various points in college. But I wanted this character to have a mission that I felt was like poetically stupid. I wanted him to be ignoring the larger thing he was trying to get to by trying to get to it in a very silly way. Like, he's looking for this ineffable sort of spiritual truth inside of the mathematics of African drumming. And in a sense, I feel like in the film, it's happening to him. Like, this possession, these like sort of ecstatic outbursts he's experiencing are things he's like categorizing as horrible afflictions when it's really exactly what he's seeking.
What did you learn about yourself in the process of making this film?
That's a good question. I just showed the film at this festival in Jamaica, Queens, last weekend, and someone asked me if I believed in the stuff about, like, the witch doctor and the possession and stuff like that, and I told them that I do. I think I don't have any certainties about things like that in this life, but I lean towards the side of letting myself believe those things. And I think that I embraced that while we were making the film. That was something I learned about myself and my perspective on the world and how I experienced the world. The scene that we shot with the Okonfuo, what we call a witch doctor, what some people call a fetish priest or traditional priestess, in the film, I've told many people many times that Adam and I both say that we feel like we sort of blacked out through that experience, that the time we spent dancing and running around in the sun with her in the middle of the day and being, you know, like forced to drink liquor that nearly made you hallucinate. Like, it was an experience where I really let myself be taken to the place this character was supposed to be going in the film. And that was what the experience felt like.
Well, I'm also curious now, as you know, because in some ways this is also a fish out of water story. And, mm-hmm. You know, those can work very well or not so well. And in your case, it did work well. But also, you know, you're a white man in a primarily black culture. And, you know, you're taking something that, you know, people who have never been to Ghana, who have never been to Africa, only know what they see in movies and TV, have a view of that spirituality as being completely supernatural, as the witch doctor or the voodoo or whatever it is. How easy or difficult was it for you to have a film that respects the culture that it's taking place in, yet at the same time poking fun at it?
Very good question. That was a tricky line to walk. And if you, I mean, I'm sure you noticed that the stuff we did with the way the various Christian churches in West Africa function was meant to sort of draw a counterpoint to that, especially because the whole film is sort of a commentary on Nollywood. And up until recently, a large portion of Nollywood films were funded by churches or church groups or pastors. And so they tended to follow a typical morality play where traditional religion and the village and non-Christian, non-modern things are the bad thing, the bad guy, the enemy, the downfall, and modernity, urbanness, and Christianity, most specifically, are the way towards goodness and holiness. And I take issue with that, and I think that all of my close friends in Ghana take issue with that as well. Ghana is now often listed as one of the most religious countries in the world, and they're building a national sanctuary right now. I think that it's like a problematic thing in the culture that we wanted to make a commentary on, and in a way, like, the friends that I have there and the way in which we put this film together incorporated the sense of seeing the benefit, the beauty, the sort of more, it feels more real there, the traditional African religion stuff. So we wanted to draw that a sort of line between the two things in the opposite way that it's usually done in Nollywood films, or to sort of prioritize the traditional as the better thing, I suppose.
An interview you were listening to with director Jules Bartkowski, who made a film called Pastor Paul. It's about a white tourist in West Africa who gets possessed by a ghost. And you're tuned to listener-sponsored radio, WBAI. We're in our marathon, and if you're interested in getting that film, you want to know more about it, you want to see it, you can get the DVD for merely a $25 pledge. You can go to WBAI.org.
Yes.
And you just put in Pastor Paul in the search. It'll come up. You can go to our Facebook page right now. NITESHIFT. Pastor Paul, right there. You click right there. Boom. It's yours. Coming. Boom. We have a limited amount. We only got like a dozen of these.
So pick up the phone.
Only $25.
Call right
now. We should
now.
Be able to get rid of all of these today.
That's right. 516-620-3602.
Tell me what the Pastor Paul package.
That's right. Pastor Paul.
Endorsed by Byron. Endorsed by the mystery guest.
Mystery guest, yes.
Very endorsed.
She said very endorsed.
Very endorsed is a quote on the box. It says very endorsed. And then mystery guest.
But it really is well crafted.
well-crafted and an interesting story. And again, it brings up a lot of different things. I have a little more of an interview with Jules Bartkowski, but I do want people to make a pledge. And here's the deal. If you want to spend $60, you want to get all the music you've been hearing too?
DGM.
Because this is some of my African DGM I'm playing you right now. You hear it?
So the compilation of 80 yes. tunes.
Now, 80 tunes, all DGM, all the time.
The film.
And the film DVD.
For $60.
Just tell me you want the Spring DGM 2018. That's the music collection. DGM yes. stands for
and
Good Music.
The movie.
And you want the Pastor Paul.
Yes.
And wow. you can support Free Speech Radio. Mr. Gus, are there some special features on the DVD?
Yeah, there's like a concert footage of the director.
Oh, wow.
And I think both of the co-stars.
Wow. Look at that, Byron.
That's
it's more than
show,
a movie.
Show, Ogundipe, and One Love to Kupola. Yeah, so you can't go wrong.
$25? Come on.
Wonderful.
That's like retail.
Yes.
And you, they donated to us. We're not even charging you more. We're just giving you what it's worth.
Because that's what it's
we
worth,
know,
right?
we
that's,
know.
That's, yeah. That's...
Exactly. We could have charged three times that. But we feel our listeners, we want you to support us. I think the $60 package
is
the way
giveaway.
To go.
Absolutely.
What's that?
It's a great giveaway.
It's a great giveaway.
Yes.
Come on. And say thanks to IndiePix.
He tells an interesting story in your interview.
What's the name of the director again?
Jules Bartkowski.
Yes.
And is he a musician as well?
He's a musician as well.
I heard that.
Yes.
He's a pop musician. Have you heard his stuff, Bart? He's cute. He seems like he belongs in Saturday morning cartoons in the 80s, in a way. He's great. He's very pop. He's very now. He's...
He's now, Byron. He's very today.
This story
he's
is
smart.
His story.
He's smart in the same way that the film is smart. So
I can imagine. This
the
is
same
his
way
story.
That his humor
this
is smart.
Well, it's a story he made. Well, I'll play a little more to you. I'll let you hear
he
about
it. He said in the interview we have
it kind of is his story.
Yeah,
I mean,
it is
that's,
his story,
that's
yes,
basically
yes.
what he did, but he
you
wasn't
went to
studying.
College.
He wasn't studying,
story.
You know, African
right.
drumming. He wasn't
right.
studying. Yeah, I mean, like, he went to explore and to learn, but he didn't, he didn't get cast in a Nollywood movie.
Nah, and he was not possessed.
No, but he you know,
he
felt
did have
like,
a spiritual awakening.
He felt like right, making a, yeah, he, yeah, right?
I stand by my
that's basically...
Right, just the same.
I'm going to go to
is
yes.
That
very
in
good.
Huh?
What?
No,
what?
Oh, I have a little more in the interview.
All right. 516-620-3602. How's your time?
516-620-3602. Pick up the phone. All right. We pledged 5 minutes. Going to play another 5 minutes of the interview.
Okay.
And take a listen. Again, it's a fascinating film. It's interesting. Absolutely worth making a pledge for.
In some ways, this is also a fish out of water story. And, you know, those can work very well or not so well. And in your case, it did work well. But also, you know, you're a white man in a primarily black culture. You're taking something that people who have never been to Ghana, who have never been to Africa, only know what they see in movies and TV, have a view of that spirituality as being completely supernatural, as the witch doctor.
Right, wait, I think
the
I played
voodoo,
you this part already, right?
One
time we were on a radio show.
Okay,
someone asked... Hollywood films were funded by churches or church groups or pastors, and so they tended to follow a typical morality play where traditional religion and the village and non-Christian, non-modern things are the bad thing, the bad guy, the enemy, the downfall, and modernity, urbanness, and Christianity most specifically are the way towards goodness and holiness. And I take issue with that, and I think that all of my close friends in Ghana take issue with that as well. Ghana is now often listed as one of the most religious countries in the world, and they're building a national sanctuary right now. I think that it's like a problematic thing in the culture that we wanted to make a commentary on, and in a way, like, the friends that I have there and the way in which we put this film together incorporated the sense of seeing the benefit, the beauty, the sort of more, it feels more real there, the traditional African religion stuff. So we wanted to draw that a sort of line between the two things in the opposite way that it's usually done in Nollywood films, or to sort of prioritize the traditional as the better thing, I suppose.
Okay. Well, that's definitely not an easy thing to pull off. And tell me a little bit about how this film has been received with an audience that is primarily black, whether it's in another country, whether it's in Africa or in Jamaica, Queens, and then how it's played at festivals where the audience may lean, let's say, more European or post-European, however you want to put it. White.
Sure. No, it's been, yeah. It's been, that's been a really funny experience for me since we finished the film, is that the first premiere we had was like right before we finished the sound design for all fundraisers and friends and family in New York at a friend's apartment in Midtown. That was lots of fun, and it was, everybody laughed and had a good time. Everybody knew each other. They were just there to support. The second screening we had was in Accra at the Alliance Française with a live concert afterwards with all the musicians from the film playing music after the film was over in Ghana. And the audience there, about 250, 300 people, also laughed out loud. It was a lot of friends and family on that side of things as well, but at the same time it was an audience who was there because One Love the Kubolo is an enormous celebrity in the country, and we did like a week-long press tour on film and radio, on television and radio, promoting the premiere of the film. And people had really interesting questions about it, knowing the little that they did about it. We had really fun times answering questions about it. There was a time we were on a radio show, someone asked One Love the question, what's the moral of the film? Like, if an audience member comes to your film, what's the lesson you want them to learn when they walk out of the theater? And One Love said, they'll learn how to do juju.
I love it.
And all the DJs, like, obviously died laughing, but also their eyes bugged out of their head. And, like, we did a TV show where he and I went on and did a song of his that involves a piece where he's speaking in tongues, and I did the whole thing with him, and like I did the whole possession dance in a sense on Ghanaian television. It was like a whole, that the reaction in Ghana was so much fun to watch, and there were definitely people who were writing some things about like, who's this guy, what's this all about, and like those had interesting follow-ups to them, especially because the project in Accra felt incredibly rooted in the community of artists in the city. Like, a lot of folks were involved who are well-respected people in the art scene in the city. So, you know, it was a very interesting experience for me because it got such a huge reception. It got such a big sort of amount of attention there, more than I could have expected. And then when we had our legitimate festival premiere, it was at the New York African Film Festival at Lincoln Center, which was a majority black audience, but it's in New York. And it was a real honor to get to premiere there among so many incredible other films from around the continent. And the response there was also really fun. This woman who interviewed Adam and myself after the film screened said, like, who are you guys and where did this movie come from, basically? Again, it was an audience that, like, got every joke that I wanted to hit home. In a way, like, the part of the comedy of the whole thing is this kind of wish fulfillment of my own personal desire to see a white man be a fool, like a Charlie Chaplin-esque fool in Africa, for him not to be the symbol of power and dominance and oppression, but to be someone who's lost his agency, someone who's not in control of even their own body.
Someone who's not Tarzan.
Right, that too. And then the next festival was the Chicago Underground Film Festival, which is like a super indie film, white guy, nerdy type of festival, which I loved. It was lots of fun. I'm not trying to talk smack on those guys. They're the best. But it was a completely different vibe than any of the screenings I had done so far. And they loved the movie also for their own reasons, but somewhat different reasons sometimes. The questions were different. The responses I was getting were different. Their knowledge of Nollywood came from a sort of like BuzzFeed-y type response of like, oh, look at that weird film industry in Nigeria. And then here was like me doing this you know, weird avant-garde presentation of it, which, you know, I think people responded well to in that scene as well. But it's been really fascinating. And then, like I said, this weekend I was showing it at Jamaica Queens, where it was an all-black audience again. I've shown it at Rutgers in Newark. That was an almost all-black audience. And also at Ramapo College, where it was almost very diverse, a group of freshmen in college. It's been a whole other project for me personally to get to watch the differences in the responses to the film in different audiences.
You're listening to an interview with Jules Bartkowski, who is the director of the film Pastor Paul, which we are doing a giveaway for here for the film. For a $25 pledge, you can get the DVD of Pastor Paul. For a $35 pledge, you can get the music you've been listening to, what we call the Spring DGM Collection 2018. It's nearly 80 tracks, over 5 hours of music. $60, you can get both. Just say, I want the Pastor Paul DVD and I want the Spring DGM, $25 or $35 respectively. You can call 516-620-3602. That's 516-620-3602. Fascinating film. Byron,
yes.
Did you find the interview interesting?
Very interesting.
It's interesting.
How old is this filmmaker?
That's a good question.
He's about 30, I think.
So your assessment is 30. It's an interesting storyline for himself.
This film premiered a couple years ago in New York, in America, in the U.S., in North America.
Right. That interview I did was a few weeks ago. That's when he played Jamaica Queen.
Yeah.
Interesting storyline, as I said. Entertaining.
And how can people get it?
They have to pick up the phone and make a pledge at 516-620-3602. And that's how easy it is. $35 gets you.
And you got it at home. You can show it to all your friends.
Yeah, you can watch it in HD online.
You watch it.
$35 places. Will get you the DGM Spring 2018 over 80 tracks.
Get the DVD.
Tracks.
Don't go online and just watch it.
You
want to support WBAI.
Yeah,
that's for $25.
You want to support for $25.
You can get.
You can have it. You can give it as a gift.
Pastor Paul.
If you have friends who like love to show you, talk to you about movies, and oh, I just love this movie. You never heard of it. You know what?
Reinvent.
Blow them away. Blow them away.
Seriously.
That's what I'm saying.
Start getting. Some
Make a pledge.
Tasty. Material.
Tasty material. 516-620-3602.
If you really want to impress your friends and your colleagues.
Mike Sargent.
Get this for your dad for Father's Day.
Pastor Paul.
Give him this great DVD.
Make a pledge.
$25.
Make a pledge.
Hey, I know you grew up in Africa, but you haven't seen this movie yet, so here's the DVD. I was thinking of you when I pledged.
Pour faire le portrait d'un oiseau. Peindre d'abord une cage avec une porte ouverte.
Byron Sanders, I have one more part of the interview I'm going to play for you. Are you ready for that?
Yeah.
Are you enjoying the DGM, by the way?
Very much so.
I added to it.
It's a very nice flavor that you're feeding.
You like
us
the flavor?
Yes.
You want to hear? I have something specific I want you to hear. I'm going to play something to you. Hold on. Hold on a second. I played that track to you before.
Do you have any sabor?
No.
Why not?
I just don't. But I'm trying to push the.
Okay.
DGM.
African DGM. You have DGM? Why didn't you tell me you have
African DGM?
African DGM.
Listen, it's so good. I'm going to come back to it. You know what I'm saying? I'm going to play the Pastor Paul to stay with Pastor Paul for till you know, play this interview. But just know, you should be pledging for everything.
Was there any process of self-discovery in writing this and creating this and then maybe even seeing it with these different audiences?
Yeah. Yeah, there was, yeah. I wish I could spend more time thinking about that before I try to articulate an answer, because I feel like that's something really worth talking about, but that I want to talk about the right, that I want to find the right thing to say about it. But in terms of self-discovery in that kind of way, I guess when the best piece, one of the best pieces of press we got for the film was before it came out in this publication called OK Africa. And the headline was, "Is Pastor Paul the first American Nollywood film?" And we had sort of jokingly been calling it the first American Nollywood film for a while among me, Adam, One Love, Foon Show. It was like a funny joke that we ended up pursuing. But her article had a very, like, it was a really intellectual set of questions that she asked me about what right do I have to be making this film. And investigating that line of questioning throughout the entirety of making it, from before to during to after to since in the response, has been a journey of self-discovery, and one that, like, I will always reflect on, but is in a sense part of the reason why I wanted to make the film, was to have that question be one to be asked about it, you know?
Okay. No, I do. And I guess my last question is, comes into, you know, it deals with the film, but it also deals with, you know, what I think are, let's just say, cultural differences, whether it's black, white, whether it's, you know, European, non-European. A talk show host once said that the best cure for racism is contact. And I have to say, you know, over time, the more and more and more, I thought that was pretty great. That was actually Trevor Noah said that. And I'm just curious, you know, because one of the great things about a film is, whether, especially if it's a film that takes place in another country, or even better yet, where it's, you know, native to that other country, it kind of gives you a glimpse of that culture. And a fish out of water film like this kind of allows you to see a culture through, you know, the audience that's not familiar with the culture can kind of, you know, identify with the character because these things are new to them too. I'm just curious, your experience as a storyteller, having gone to Ghana at such a young age, having experienced a complete, you know, it's nothing like New Jersey, you know? So, what are your thoughts on that, and what are your thoughts on just the importance of connecting cultures through art?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's like a really important personal goal of mine to make that a part of all the work that I'm doing. I feel really lucky to have gotten to do it with my first feature. And, you know, I think we tried to sort of take care of the fact that we were taking largely going to be, it was mostly going to be an American audience, on a sort of learning curve through this cultural experience. And we tried to find the way we found to sort of button those moments for that version of an audience's need to be sort of handheld through that experience were the food scenes. There's three scenes in the film that show a greater ease of the tourist dealing with such a different cuisine. It's just like an easy and fun cinematic way for us to like show that experience, to show like how sometimes shockingly different these things are, and to show that he's on the same learning curve as they are, not watching and not understanding.
No. I it's actually one of the very memorable moments in the film. And, you know, having it play to, I guess, what I would call three different kinds of audience, you know, the native audience that understands and knows the culture, an African-American or black audience here in America, and then, you know, primarily white audience here. Those are three distinctly different audiences. What overall do you hope for an audience to come away with, besides learning juju, of course?
I kind of want if there's like one thing I want, it's I want people to have a new perspective on contemporary Africa. I want people to like have a curiosity and an excitement and a sort of level of intrigue and mystery about the fact that that most Americans, so many Westerners in general, have a very skewed understanding of what life is like there. I mean, and that I wanted to take the audience, all three of these audiences, on a journey of exposure, like you said, contact with a version of Africa that is not often seen, and especially in Western narratives, white man narratives, or narratives made by white men like myself.
Well, I think you definitely have succeeded, and I appreciate you taking the time, man.
And thanks so much for having me. It's been a delight.
In some ways, this is also a fish out of water.
Byron Saunders.
My son.
So, incredible. That's some of the DGM, the African DGM. But I have so much DGM on this collection, Byron, that covers so much stuff. I have interesting remixes of things.
Right.
And so there's a lot there, and I think you should go for it. But I do want to say, we do have, and we still have some left, the Pastor Paul DVD.
Yes.
And for a $35 pledge, you can get it. Do you want to say any last words about it, Mr. Guest?
Wait. If you haven't seen this film, you need to see the film.
True.
So the best way to see it is by pledging.
That's right.
And getting the DVD.
Absolutely.
Because it's collectible and you can watch it if your power goes out and your Wi-Fi goes down and all hell breaks loose. Can I say hell on the radio?
Hold on, I'm checking the... No, Byron, it's not on Byron, the list.
No? Okay, so if all hell breaks loose, you can watch Pastor Paul on DVD on your TV if you have a TV and a DVD player or a computer or a laptop or whatever and a DVD player, and you watch it when all hell breaks loose, and it's a beautiful way to spend any 2 hours of your life. It's even, what is it, like a 90-minute movie, right?
It's an hour and 7 minutes.
Okay, so it's like a 70-minute long movie. You watch it.
67.
It's like a breath of fresh air. So it's a short feature. It's a breath of fresh air. It's musical. It's brilliant. It's comedic. It's great.
Pastor Paul.
Yeah.
$25 pledge.
That's it.
We sent it to you.
516. Wow. When all hell breaks loose.
516-620-3602. That's 516-620-3602.
You'll
Pastor
be ready.
Paul.
You'll be ready.
Make a pledge.
Pledge, and you will be ready when all hell breaks loose. Wow.
Music like this, they make it and they say, this will be played on Night Shift, don't you think?
That's why I call it DGU. Damn good music.
The name of the show.
Night Shift.
Amazing. DGM.
DGM.
Good selection choice.
You enjoyed that. Now, we're going to move on to another part of the show. Keep in mind, I think you should have pledged by now if you haven't. But at this part of the show is when we show you how the world has become like science fiction. And we play music to you that you will want to have at home, on your person, in your life, as you move through life like Byron does when he's on assignment.
I'm with the people.
I know you're amongst the... You go amongst the people.
I go amongst the people.
I know you do. And I have... This is all part of the DGM, Byron.
Yes.
You with it?
I am so with it.
So I have a story for you, Byron, before we go to the next big piece of music here. I have so many interesting stories, Byron. I have some stories that have carried over from the week before because they were so good. But here you go, Byron. Here's one for you. I think this says something about the world we're living in. Yes. Do you know about this, Byron?
Okay.
Mystery guest knows all about this.
It's a dog's life.
Yes, it was a dog's life.
Yes, it used to
be. It is a dog's life no longer.
No longer. They have been replaced. Robotic noses could be the future of disaster rescue if they can out-sniff search dogs. So the premise
is... Yes, robotic noses.
Robotic noses. Is this a nose on the leash only? What is this? You send your nose in? You don't need a dog anymore?
Robotic noses. That's it. You don't need it. Just send in the robotic nose.
Just
send
in the nose.
Go ahead, Byron. That's it. Just send it in. You don't need a dog.
Send in the nose.
And by the way, I read this because I got a petition sent to me from change.org where you know, because they're looking to legalize marijuana and they have marijuana sniffing dogs.
Yes.
In Illinois, they're saying, oh, well, you know, if they legalize marijuana, we're going to have to kill all these dogs.
No.
Yes. Let's keep going, Byron. Putting into the
That's
science
why they should
context,
legalize marijuana so they can have the dogs live a good and happy life.
Well, no. They put these dogs down.
See, now that's the inhumane part right
Byron,
there.
Byron, that's why there's a change.org petition. That's why there's a petition.
Just let the dog smoke some good high-grade grass, I'm telling you.
You have to give him a contact guy. Dogs can't smoke, Byron. Sorry.
But wait a minute. They can be sniffing and get
the contact.
Evidence.
That's a contact guy. How Byron, finish the story.
So we're going to send in our leashed noses. As Hurricane Harvey ripped through Texas and neighboring Gulf states, in August 2017, leaving a record-breaking 30 million gallons of quickly dirtied water. What is this? Hold on.
You got a different story? You got a different story, Byron?
Okay. Yeah, it is related.
You're back. Yeah, keep going, Byron. Talk to us.
All right, anyway. Management agency, more commonly known as FEMA, moved into position, and among the personnel from federal agencies as varied as the Department of Health and Human Services and the Coast Guard were numerous urban search and rescue teams, experts in finding people in the midst of a large-scale crisis, whether they're stranded on a roof or trapped deep beneath the rubble. For all their expertise, these responders aren't going it alone now. You see, they're equipped with listening devices, heat detection equipment, and most importantly, some loyal sniffers. See, we use the dogs as locating tools, says Scott, Matthew Scott, of the New York Police Department's K-9 unit. Now, the dogs will locate live human scent under structural collapse. But in his work for FEMA, which is fundamentally a constellation of emergency response experts who mobilize in a crisis, and Muchusak also helps to train and deploy disaster dogs across the country. Well, anyway, while K-9 units are a tried and fairly true method for identifying people trapped in the wreckage of a disaster, analytical chemists have for years been working in the lab to create a robotic alternative. Yes, a synthetic sniffer, they argue, could potentially prove to be just as or even more reliable than a dog. Well, of course, more resilient in the face of external pressures like heat and humidity and infinitely more portable. And as of this writing, you can't hoist a dog with a drone. Well, but for all this excitement in academia, those on the ground remain skeptical. So there's your story.
Well, in my opinion, though, Disaster Dog is a great name for a band.
And that's it?
I like Disaster Dog.
You're fading the dogs out, too?
I like Disaster Dog. You don't like that? That's a good
name.
I thought it was about the dogs holding on to a job.
It is holding on to a job.
No.
They go get marijuana at the farm, right?
I want to be Disaster Dog.
Where does a retired sniffer go to?
He doesn't. That's the just it.
They're going to put him away?
They put him down. They sent him to the glue farm.
Oh, no. Not fair.
I agree.
Not fair.
No.
They need an attorney. I think I can get him off.
Get him off.
It's real 90s sounding.
Just so you know, I am running down the alley. I'm running down the alley late at night. I am listening to the DGM in my headphones. This is what I hear when I'm running.
That's when she hits the puddle.
No. I jumped over the puddle. I didn't splash into the puddle. I jumped over.
Across
the track.
You need this for the soundtrack of your life.
Okay, so if I pledge $35, I get the...
You get the CD free.
I get the CD.
$35 pledge, you get the CD free. All the music. 5 hours. It's an MP3 CD. You can rip it, put it on your iPod.
You hear that?
Your iPhone. Your Android. You can burn 5 CDs at home. If you still have CDs.
Does the metadata transfer?
Yes, it does.
Wow.
goodness. Extremely.
You're with that.
That's kind of cool.
Yes.
Very nice. Mr. Guest was with it, too. Look at that. Byron and the Mr. Guest on the same page at the same time.
Nice. Well, the music could have been, you know, a little more complex.
A little more complex, I see.
But I like working with you, Mr. Guest.
You like working with Mr. Guest?
Oh, yeah. I love listening to the music, too.
Yeah.
Oh, do you know?
We make good music together.
Well, the conversation is sometimes worthwhile.
Indeed.
The conversation is sometimes worthwhile.
Absolutely. But the music is always good.
Excellent. Yes. I agree with that. Well, Byron. I do have a story I'm going to give to the Mr. Guest, but I do want you to take the time to make a pledge.
Yes, please.
Right now, make a pledge at the DGM. If you're enjoying it, I'm going to be playing a lot of DGM for the next hour and 20 minutes, and I'll be playing, giving you some stories of what's happening in the world.
Lots happening.
Life is, and there's a lot happening. Let me just say, there is a lot happening.
Yes, indeedy peedy.
Yes, did you say yes, indeedy peedy?
I did indeed.
Wow, Byron. What year were you born?
1950. Thank you very 18, much.
What 18?
Back in my day.
Exactly.
This is how we're saying it back then.
They sent the stage.
Yes, and nitty pitty.
They sent the stagecoach.
That's right, stagecoach.
Stagecoach. All right, I have the most disgusting story I have for the mystery guest to read. But I am going to let this piece of music play, and I want you to consider how good it is and how you need to have it and how you need to make a pledge.
This is more
516
DGM.
Is more DGM. 516-620-3602.
Yes.
Make a pledge. Support WBAI.
Why? Because we love you.
Because you need to.
And you need
silence. Attendre. chacune des plumes de l'oiseau. Faire ensuite le portrait de l'arbre en choisissant la plus belle de ses branches. Pour l'oiseau, peindre aussi le vert feuillage et la fraîcheur du vent, la poussière du soleil et le bruit des bêtes de l'herbe.
And going for some of the, as Eric Velasquez calls, juju music.
Yes.
Juju African music. DGM.
Yes.
I rediscovered some old things.
And what did you discover, Mike?
This is one. You have to get the DGM collection to know what it is, but I rediscovered this. This is an old piece. This is back in the day. We used to play this on the show.
JoJo back in the day.
That's right.
Nice orchestration.
Yes.
And nice dynamics to the music itself, including the orchestration of the musicianship.
I can almost hear frogs.
It kind of takes you on a journey.
Journey, yes, it does. Yeah. The essence of what DGM is.
Very good stuff.
The essence.
Absolutely.
And of course, you can't have a great piece without a remix. That was a remix of a great piece. There's another remix that I also have on the DGM collection that if you make a pledge, Spring DGM, DGM of course stands for Damn Good Music, Spring DGM 2018, you can just call 516-620-3602 and just say, I want the Spring DGM 2018 collection. Or go to give to.wbai.org. That's give to.wbai.org. And you just put in DGM. You'll see. There are a couple collections up there. This is the one. This Spring 2018. Do you remember the song at all, Byron? The original?
It reminds me of something I can't play.
Exactly. Mr. Guest feels the same way.
Deep in the forest. That's what I'm imagining.
during this part.
Love it. Right, excellent choice.
Mr. Guest has a story. This is a disturbing story, in my opinion. And it also speaks of many things, not to mention 70s sci-fi. Go ahead.
From the South China Morning Post. This is from April. April 26th, update.
That's right.
A giant indoor farm in China is breeding 6 billion cockroaches a year. Here's why.
6 billion a year, Byron. Nothing can go wrong. They were breeding.
South China Morning Post turns a spotlight on the disgusting insect with apparently remarkable medicinal qualities at the world's largest breeding facility where the bugs outnumber the human's population.
Now, just think for a second.
Planet's human
population. PlanetHuman.com. You should check that out, Byron. They're breeding more cockroaches than there are humans on the planet.
Think about that.
6 billion a year. Now, it's the largest. That suggests there are more. Go ahead, please, Mr. Guest.
Well, did I mention AI?
Not yet. That's Byron, this story just gets better and better. Just keep listening.
Long,
prepare to blow your mind.
Spaced rows of shelves fill a multi-story building in about the size of 2 sports fields. The shelves are lined with open containers of food and water. It is warm, humid, and dark all year round, with freedom to roam, to find food, and reproduce. Fully sealed like a prison, it has strict limitations on access to visitors from birth to death. Inhabitants never see the sun. The world's largest cockroach farm is breeding 6 billion adult cockroaches a year and using artificial intelligence to manage a colony larger than the world's human population, all for medicinal use. It's in number larger than the world's human population, but it takes up 2 blocks.
2 blocks.
Yeah, long, narrowly spaced shelves fill a multi-story building about the size of 2 sports fields. 2 sports fields worth of cockroaches.
Go ahead, keep going. That's mind-boggling. That's just mind-boggling.
It is part of the production process.
Imagine being
process.
Dropped into that.
Yes. For a healing potion consumed by millions of patients in China, according to the government. There are many cockroach breeding facilities in China for use as an ingredient in medicine or as a source protein for livestock feed.
They're feeding cockroaches to their livestock.
They could just eat the cockroaches. But no other facility can match the productivity of the farm in the city of Sichuan in southwestern Sichuan province. Nearly 28,000 full-sized cockroaches per square foot.
28,000
per square foot.
Listen to me.
All right. Like, if you get that much yen, good for you and your building.
In any area.
But guess what?
Of any size.
That's how many alive cockroaches. Are they all alive? Are they all alive? 28,000 per square foot?
Of course they're alive.
Is that cubic or square foot?
It said square foot. That's
it did
a box.
Say square
that's
foot.
Like a box of 28,000
wow.
roaches.
That's like a shoebox.
Of 28,000
roaches.
That's just, imagine.
How much do they each pay?
That gets delivered by FedEx.
It is the first time in history so many cockroaches have been confined and bred in one space.
Oh.
The project had achieved
nothing
so many
wrong.
Scientific and technological breakthroughs that it deserved a national science award, the provincial government said. The facility achieved its unrivaled efficiency partly by being controlled by a smart manufacturing system powered by artificial intelligence, AI, algorithms, according to the report. the system constantly collects and analyzes more than 80 categories of big data, including humidity, temperature, food supply, and consumption. But it monitors changes such as genetic mutations and how these affect the growing rates of individual cockroaches. AI is transforming China in many sectors, from powerful facial recognition systems capable of identifying 1.3 billion citizens in seconds to nuclear submarines that can help a captain make faster, more accurate decisions in combat. In the cockroach farm, the AI system learns from past work, self-adjusting to improve cockroach production.
Hold on. AI's assisting and overseeing improving cockroach production. 6 billion a year.
Excuse me. Hold on.
Yes.
Hold the horses, Louise.
Yes.
Hold
yes.
on.
Yes.
All you can eat buffet.
Life
there
is like science fiction.
Why?
Wait, let her finish. Let her finish. Go ahead, Mr. Guest.
Dr. Zhang Wei, former assistant researcher at the College of Mechanical Engineering at Zhejiang University, who was involved in the development of the system, told the South China Morning Post, "There is nothing like it in the world. It has used some unique solutions to address some unique issues." Rustling in the darkness, Zhang confirmed the use of AI technology in the project, but declined to give details. The farm is operated by the Good Doctor Pharmaceutical Group of Chengdu, Sichuan, which confirmed the validity of the government document but could not answer the Post's queries because the matter involved trade secrets. According to a 2011 report by the government,
trade
newspaper
secrets.
Guangming Daily,
a visitor must
change into a sanitized working suit to avoid bringing in pollutants or pathogens. "There are very few human beings in the facility," the article stated, "on shelves, floors, and ceiling. The cockroaches were, quote, everywhere, unquote." "Hold your breath and you only hear a rustling sound," it continued. "Wherever a flashlight swept, the cockroaches fled. Wherever the beam landed, there was a sound like wind blowing through leaves. It was just like standing in the depths of a bamboo forest in late autumn. The cool breeze blows and the leaves rustle. Could superbreed terrorize the city? The sheer number of insects locked in the facility, the largest colony of cockroaches ever to have existed on the planet, conjures some nightmarish scenarios." Professor Zhu Chaodong, the Institute of Zoology's lead scientist in insect evolution studies at the Chinese Academy of Sciences in Beijing,
said
it would be a catastrophe,
studies.
Quote, catastrophe, if billions of cockroaches were suddenly released into the environment, be it through human error or a natural disaster like an earthquake that damaged a building.
But we're going to keep working. We're going
to
keep making $6 million a year. It would be awful. It would be a disaster. It would be worse.
80,000
it'd be like
one such accident
biological,
could be, quote, unquote, terrifying.
Fukushima.
The farm is located close to...
I got a question.
We're going to keep doing it.
Qingshan Airport.
I've got a question.
Multiple
lines of question like, how do you get a ticket out of here?
And work properly to prevent the disaster of accidental release, Xu said. Cockroaches multiply rapidly in a suitable environment, said Xu. Given Qingshan's warm climate and ample rainfall, a dozen of them could infest an entire neighborhood. Only a dozen.
It's all it would take. A dozen. See, that's
only
the thing.
A dozen.
A dozen.
Infest
a dozen
entire
would infest an entire neighborhood. They're making
there
billions.
There are also concerns.
Nothing
farms,
can go wrong,
Byron. Reproduction.
Nothing can go wrong.
And genetic screening would accelerate the insect's evolution and produce super cockroaches of abnormal size and breeding capability.
Super
although Xu said this was unlikely to happen. Cockroaches are believed
of abnormal size and breeding capability
that brought extinction for other species. Every cockroach is a super cockroach, Xu said. Mother Nature has already done its job.
Every cockroach.
There is little room left for us to make improvements.
Is a super
creating
cockroach.
A potion. Creating a potion. At the time of the government report, the farm had generated a total of 4.3 billion yuan, USD, $684 million in revenue over the years by manufacturing a potion made entirely of cockroaches. When they reach the desired weight and size, the cockroaches are fed into machines and crushed to make the potion, which had, quote, remarkable effects, quote, unquote, on stomach pain and other ailments of the provincial government. The potion has a tea-like color, tastes, quote, slightly sweet, unquote,
tea.
And has, quote, a slightly fishy smell, unquote, according to the product's packaging. More than 40 million patients with respiratory, gastric, and other diseases were cured after taking the potion on doctor's prescriptions, according to the official report, which stated that the farm was selling it to more than 4,000 hospitals across the country. The miracle-like cure, cockroach, has been an ingredient in traditional Chinese medicine for thousands of years. In some rural areas in southern China, infants are still occasionally fed cockroaches mixed with garlic to treat fever caused by an infection or upset stomach.
Cockroaches mixed with garlic?
It's true. They grind a little paste for you when you're a baby, and that's how you learn how to enjoy food.
Yuck.
The Chinese government financed nationwide studies into cockroaches' medicinal value that, after more than two decades of laboratory investigation and clinical trials, had discovered or confirmed dozens of disease-fighting proteins and biochemical compounds with huge potential value in medicine. Thousands of pages of Chinese medical journals have detailed findings suggesting the rejuvenating effect of the cockroach potion. It could stimulate regrowth of damaged tissues such as skin and mucosa, the sticky membrane on the surface of internal organs that is difficult to heal and causes chronic pain. Patients suffering burns and serious stomach inflammations recovering faster from the potion treatment without, according to numerous studies. The potion is not a pleasant, does not have the magical power against all diseases that the researcher experienced in cockroach-related medicines in the Institute of Materia Medica at the Chinese Academy of Medical Sciences in Beijing. But its effect on certain symptoms is well established and confirmed by molecular science and large-scale hospital applications. Patients learn the Latin. There's a potentially major disadvantage of the potion, according to the CAMS researcher, who requested it not to be named. The source of raw material to most people is disgusting, she said. That is the important reason why we use the potion. It is not found in other countries. Even in China, most patients might not know the liquid came from cockroaches. The potion is not for sale over the counter, but the Post has bought it.
Like a big roach on the side, smiling.
In a drugstore in Beijing, without being asked for a doctor's prescription. A pack containing two bottles of 100 milliliter cost a bit more than 50 yuan, USD $8. On the packaging and in the user ingredients instructions, only one ingredient was listed, Periplaneta Americana, the Latin name of the American cockroach.
Periplaneta Americana.
One of the largest cockroach species.
Would you like some Periplaneta Americana tea?
The internet has played host to live discussions about the medicine known as Kang Fu Xin Ge, or Potion of Recovery.
That sounds a lot better than roach.
Let me just say this about potion number 9. Okay.
Wait, are you finished, Mr. Guest?
There is more.
Oh, please. Yes!
I searched the Periplaneta Americana one drinking potion. I saw the picture and spat it all on screen, wrote one user on Baidu Teba, the large Chinese online community run by search engine company Baidu. Several patients who had consumed the potion told the Post they were not aware of its content when they drank it. I didn't know this was cockroach. This is knowledge I'd rather live without, said a young mother in Beijing who was prescribed it to accelerate recovery after giving birth a year ago. I don't know the effect, but I healed eventually, said another patient who took the potion to cure a back injury. Disgusting but powerful. Han Yijun, a representative of Good Doctor Pharmaceutical Group in Beijing, has denied the company misleads patients by referring to the giant cockroach by its academic name. Our drug has been used in the hospitals for many, many years and established an enormous number of fans, she said. Enough to fill a shoebox. Some patients with chronic stomach illness were taking the potion regularly because it could relieve their pain significantly, she said. They all knew it's made from cockroaches, Han said. It is a disgusting insect, but there are hardly any drugs on the shelves with the same effect.
Wow. Byron, are you rendered speechless.
Okay, here's
the medicinal.
Can I approach the bit?
Yes.
Please? All right, thank you. First and foremost, my dip.
Yes.
Here's what I want to know.
I want to know about back problems cured by roach tea.
Here's what I want to know.
I would drink 1,000 roaches.
Would you drink 1,000 roaches to help you back?
Are you kidding me? I would drink a billion.
Whoa. Excuse me. That's like a.
I would drink a billion roaches.
That's a good chunk of the year.
What? Why are we wasting money trying to build a wall along the Mexican line? When you're telling me, then you're telling me La Cucaracha is bigger and worse than so why
more
are we focusing all of our attention on a wall?
Why invest in our
water? You come over the fence. I can feed a family of...
Here's my second question. Why aren't we stockpiling Raid somewhere? I want to know, where is the Raid factory? Because if we can stop the hordes of 6 billion cockroaches, do you know how
you can infest your whole block.
Excuse me. Why are we wasting billions of dollars on a wall that's going to fall down? We should be taking care of the cockroach storm approaching.
If 12 get out, it can take over a village.
Just juice them already.
Wow. I don't like the sound of that. That's a horror film.
I'll drink some.
No, nowhere. But I did read a story about roach milk.
Yeah, if it's going to help,
I remember reading that story. So, yes, there's kinds. I don't know. I can't fit extracting.
My vegan friends are going to think twice about me. But
yuck.
You know what? Never mind them. I mean, why don't they worry themselves about meat eaters or something?
Story says it's May 2018, but this has been ongoing for the last 4 years.
Yeah, but they're about to do something. Clearly, it's been going on since it happened, but now this is all they can do, and no one's going to stop them.
Japan is poised to flood the Pacific Ocean with 1 million tons of radioactive water contaminated by the Fukushima nuclear plant. All right. 1 million tons of radioactive water contaminated by, the Fukushima disaster, the nuclear plant disaster. Storage space at the abandoned facility is running dangerously low as officials race to secure the nearly 160 tons of contaminated water produced at the plant per day. Wow. as space for tanks dwindles.
So this has been going on since it happened.
Yes, since
and
it's happened.
They're just containing it, but they have nothing else they can do. That's going to, exactly, like, we contained it, and now we're going to release
it. We're going to bury it.
We're
going
to release it into the ecosystem there.
As space for tanks dwindles, the Japanese government and the plant's owner, Tokyo Electric Power, that's called TEPCO, may decide to dump treated water into the ocean. TEPCO plans to secure 1.37 million tons of storage capacity by the end of 2020, but it has not yet decided on a plan for after 2021. Wait a minute.
Exactly.
You're still dumping up until 2021, and you want to kind of... You want a tax break, so you can.
You got to roll it out. You got to roll out slowly. Yeah. Listen, this will be going on.
How bad it really
forever.
Is.
Forever, we will eventually poison the entire planet. But let's not say that. Let's
Do you
just
think
say,
there'll be lead water in Flint, Michigan, by the time this gets to 2021?
Listen, I think that water wars are an impending reality.
I put money on that.
An impending reality. I think water wars are an impending reality. I think it is part of the irony of universe, God, whatever you want to call it, that the thing we value least will become the thing we have to value most. And that will be part of the legacy of mankind. You know, we could do all kinds of things. We can do all kinds of awful things and kill all kinds of people and all that, and invent bombs and whatnot. But at a certain point, water can't survive without it. You can survive without food longer than you can without water. And that goes for all mammals, pretty much. And roaches, Mark.
Apparently.
Roaches can survive without food.
Apparently.
They need water.
You know.
So, you know, maybe the roaches have to take over to save the planet.
Have they found anything such as a roach armada?
Not yet. But
they can sell
the fact
seven
that 12
seas.
Can take over a whole neighborhood and that they, you know, come on, let's face it. Any commoditized creature, okay, be it a shrimp or a cow or a pig or a chicken.
Well, these are going to be some radioactive shrimp.
Any commodified creature, they're going to figure out a way to make it grow faster, bigger, to make more and more money. So, my guess is what that woman, Mr. Guest, said, oh, it's preposterous. We're not going to make a super roach. Absolutely. Absolutely.
Already made.
Super roaches are a given, in my opinion. If they're making 6 billion roaches a year,
help!
And it's like they're a force of nature, like just, and he says, oh, if it doesn't get
why
out, come on.
Why are you talking to me about MS-13?
What about one baby roach gets out?
Why are we talking about MS-13?
Come on.
What's we need that, to be talking about the cucarachas.
Well, you know, a dozen. You have to worry about a dozen.
No,
if you
no,
see
no.
one, it's okay. But, you know, we well,
where
see, like,
the cockroaches coming from?
And another one.
Okay,
and then
so
another one,
somebody
another one.
Somebody leaves their lunch in their bag.
Where the cockroaches
the AIs
are.
Don't go in and out for lunch.
Where the that's cucarachas
but
coming
it's
from?
It's all AIs. And let's say, what if something happened?
They're
what if
safety.
There was an earthquake? What if there's an earthquake?
Or a volcano,
they never expected
like in Hawaii.
To be. Yeah, but then no an earthquake. Something like, oh,
so
we never knew there was
going
to be an earthquake.
Hawaii, where'd they go?
Boom. There's an earthquake at
do
the roach
become,
farm.
Do they become radioactive?
And then we got the roach holocaust. An invasive, and that's how they sound. Like, it's a Sci-Fi Channel movie. I'm going to sell that script. I'm telling you.
Okay.
There it is.
Anyway.
Well, we helped you write it, so remember us when it... When it comes to sell.
Go ahead, Byron.
At a Fukushima committee meeting on Friday at Ikaro Ono, chief decommissioning officer of TEPCO said, it is impossible to continue to store treated water forever. Wow. At the safety meeting, an expert committee set up by the industry ministry discussed dumping the contaminated water into the Pacific. So now Japan News reports that one committee member said while the fishery industry in Fukushima and other prefectures is in the process of revival, should we dispose of the treated water now another said, in order to advance the decommissioning of a number of tanks that have been in storage, should be decreased at an early rate. So they got to dump them somewhere. The number of storage tanks.
Dude, you know, this story is just so screwed up. I mean, okay, they've already acknowledged that we've already decimated the fishing in these areas.
Yes.
You know, it's already been nuclear. And I love how they don't even really go into any detail, because it's not like nuclear just goes away after a season or two. You know, it's got, what is the half-life on some
like
nuclear?
8,000 years.
Exactly, something ridiculous. And so it's never going to come back the way it was. And now we're at a point where we played with this technology, and this culture happened to do what they did, and, well, that's it. You know, mankind, you know, we as a group here, we screwed up, but we got to release it. Sorry, we can't hold on to this forever, so we got to release it. That's it. It's just, you know, it's kind of mind-blowing, in my opinion.
So another said, in order to advance the decommissioning, the number of tanks should be decreased at an early date. So they're trying to get rid of them. Where are they going to get rid of them to, though?
The number
into
the of ocean.
Storage tanks for contaminated water and other materials has steadily risen at the Fukushima plant on Japan's east coast. So, wow. In 2011, a 10-meter-high tsunami that killed nearly 19,000 people crashed into Japan's Fukushima nuclear power plant. This led to several meltdowns, allowing harmful radioactive fuel rods and debris to escape from contaminated areas. 7 years later, after the disaster, researchers are still struggling to clean up fuel in the waters of the wasting reactors. Wow. That was a deadly disposal of a lot of radioactive material into the ocean and into the surrounding area.
Yeah.
Very high contamination.
Well, and here's the thing. Okay, they've already acknowledged, and I mean, again, it's just so mind-blowing. They've already acknowledged, not that... It's like a shock that, you know, all this nuclear water has destroyed fishing in the area.
Systems, yes.
Okay, so we're going to release it to destroy fishing around the world. So I believe that at some point all fish will be...
Well, they have been discovering, and they have been putting a warning out on the salmon from certain areas.
All of them. It's going to be
all
planet-wide.
All up and down
planet-wide.
The Pacific coastlines. And now that with the volcano...
All we will have is farmers.
The volcano that's erupting in Hawaii is very dangerous, and they're having to... starting
it's
to evacuate people.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's... Yeah,
but that's part of the tsunami.
Well, I think that's part of the changing of what's happened to the atmosphere of the Earth.
Can the lava help?
Yes, it will ultimately. It's a process, but
it'll help get rid of
who's creating the meltdown.
The humans,
or is it just an explosion?
Anything, or is it a toxic substance, or what is the lava?
If you're enjoying the DGM, that's the damn good music that's playing in the background. You can make a pledge. You can call 516-620-3602. You need music to listen to like this as you discuss the potential end of the world. 516-620-3602, and just say you want the spring DGM. And I'll tell you what, if you don't want a CD and you say, wow, I don't even have a CD player anymore, I still want the music, after you make a pledge, email us at lifeislikesciencefiction@gmail.com. We'll send you the digital files. How's that? With the information on all the artists, so you can go out and support them. What do you think? I think that's fair. So, go online at give2wbai.org or pledge at 516-620-3602. Spring DGM. If you go to give2wbai.org, just put in DGM.
And thank
Spring
you.
2018.
And thank you for those who have made your already made your pledge.
Thank
you so very much.
Thank
we
you.
Really appreciate
yes,
it.
Yes, we do. Yes,
so
we
that
do.
Keeps us moving forward.
Yes, we do.
Because it's listener-sponsored radio. It's your radio. Thank you for your loyal support.
Who's this?
Hello. How are you?
We're okay.
Yana.
Yana?
Yeah.
So,
Yana. I want...
Yeah, go ahead.
May I just say, I'm curious why the discussion on this whole nuclear Armageddon is not more active. Why it's sort of underneath the radar and you don't hear nuclear experts in the media, are they being silenced? Or
that's a good question. That's a good question. I mean, you know, this kind of information that we feel compelled to play here on Night Shift because it just shows what's happening in the world, and it's to me that story says so much, Byron, about the world that we're in,
yes,
and how much we accept, and
yes,
how you know, I've talked about it before, just how we as human beings, part of our survival mechanism is to adapt. And, you know, the other version of that is to normalize things that may not seem or should not be normal, but we normalize it in order to survive, to not get totally stressed out. You know, you ignore human suffering. You can't give money to every bum, you know. And there it is. So, you know, if I said to you, you know, did you hear about the police who killed an unarmed person of color? You go, which one? It's so normalized now that it's not shocking. It's just the way it is. So I think the fact that the world is being completely screwed up, Fukushima's been... Listen, that's what they've contained. We're not talking about... They've been spewing the radioactive water for years, already spewing. This is what they contained. They couldn't contain all of it. They contained what they did. Now, what they contain, now they're going to release. So, And so it's sort of like they've already been contaminating. And from 2.5 years ago, Canada stopped taking seafood from Japan and that whole area of the world. But we in the United States did not. We did not. So we will see now what that low-level radiation does to our DNA, to our children, to everything. We're going to see it because it's already happened. They're not going to tell you. These industries have making too much money to tell you, like, oh, stop eating fish forever. They're not going to say that. Who could possibly say that? Now, we all know farm-raised whatever is not great, but what choice are we going to have? So... are they being silenced? Perhaps, but who pays for somebody to study any of that? If somebody's not paying, it's not being studied. Now, I have to ask you a question. What's your name? Nala?
Diana.
Yeah.
Diana. Diana, did you pledge?
Yes.
Okay. All right. You can many talk. Times. You pledge. We love you now.
Thank
we
you.
Love you as long as you pledge. Okay.
Many times.
All right. Many. All right. Many, did you pledge tonight, though? Did you pledge tonight?
Yeah. The $35.
Oh, okay. Okay. DJ. All right. Yes. Yes. You are a perfect
certified.
Listener. Perfect. Perfect.
Certified.
That's certified. That's
before
it's pledged,
like
certified.
$350.
Whoa. Whoa. Why don't we have a $350 pledge?
We just did. She created it.
Well, no.
No, it was
not to
all together.
All together. Wow.
Shows.
Yes, yes. Thank you so very, very much.
Amy Goodman.
Yeah.
Some
oh,
other
Amy,
ones.
Yes, Amy's one of my favorites as well.
Yeah.
But yes.
And how long have you been listening to the show?
Yes. Yes. Long. Quite a while.
You're
going to
say.
You're going to
say.
But
you're going to say a long ass time. You almost said it.
Yeah, quite a while because it's something. There's nothing. First of all, there's nothing else.
Oh well, that. Thank you. Thank
hello.
You.
No,
nothing
down.
Else good, and it's always unpredictable.
Well,
always unpredictable.
There's nothing else on, so you got that in your favor. There's crap on. So
yeah,
you can't predict Night Shift.
Yes.
You can't
yeah,
predict
unpredictable,
the future.
Unpredictable,
and so. So it's real human beings. It's not like
except for Byron.
Nuclear
Byron
zapped,
is,
not zapped by nuclear.
That's right. Byron's not human though. Just let me let you know that.
Just
Byron.
Activities.
I'm curious why they didn't take care of it like Chernobyl, or
well,
why the
know,
world didn't run.
But you see, here's the thing: that take
oh,
care of it.
It's about 100
take
times
care
worse
of it.
Than Chernobyl.
Here's
that's
the thing:
why.
It is thousands of times worse than Chernobyl. Here's the thing: take care of it. Okay, here, just sort of like the famous Jeff Goldblum lines in the original Jurassic Park. You know, we're so quick to, you know, revel in the fact that we can, that we don't ask whether we should. You know, nuclear technology has never been 100% safe. You can put in safety factors, you can put in fail safes, but there's so many unplanned things, and there's, at a certain point, there's no contingency. There's no contingency for a nuclear plant that's been happened to be built near a fault line on an ocean and all the things that Fukushima was. And then what? Okay, that happens. The core melts. And now there's lots of water spewing into... Radioactive water's been spewing, you know, all, for years now. Millions and billions of gallons. For years.
Make no mistake about it. The accident at Chernobyl created a nuclear zone.
Yes, it did.
Of about 10 miles square.
Yes, it did. Yes, it did.
From the epicenter of its radiation
yes, it
moment.
Did.
And that was because it's all inland. Now, the Fukushima.
Right, it was on the
water.
It's the water, exactly. So that's it. So it's not contained, it's uncontainable.
It's still spewing.
And the final answer there is that. There's nothing they can do. There is no contingency. Why can't they get? Why didn't they fix it? There's no fixing. There's no fixing. We can contain it for a while to keep people ghosts, you know, from saying, "Oh, you're releasing it into the water. All right, we'll contain it." And at a certain point, all right, well, we're gonna release it. What do you mean you gotta release it? Well, we can't keep holding it here. We're not running out of room. And there it is. This is where we are.
It's like Blazing Saddles or something.
Yes, it is.
What about it's going to go down in the fault line and split the earth in half? Or
now,
is it going to...
let's just say...
It's such a nightmare. What about Trump saying he's going to promote more nuclear...
listen, you know, there's no doubt that, you know, in the larger scheme of things... You know, the change that we're experiencing is going to have extreme. And when I say change of administration, of priorities, of what's going on, will affect the rest of humanity. That's just, it's just clear. We're watching it. We're living that history. Just like these things you read about, like, you know, Stalin and Hitler and this and that and Gaddafi, all these things. And you go, wow, what would it have been like? You know, and what if it was on an even larger scale? We're in it. Here we are. Do you concur?
Like Gaddafi, how did you put him with Hitler?
Well, I'm just saying, you know, people, who, dictators who send their, who affect the world and their people and make things a lot worse than it was before they came along.
But Gaddafi had free education and equality for women and things like that in the country. I think they said the reason Gaddafi was put down is because he wanted to get off the dollar as a currency and go on.
That's true. That's right. You know, like actually, you're right. You're right.
And he wanted to open the doors to help Africa.
I shouldn't throw Gaddafi in there. I shouldn't throw Gaddafi.
Yeah, he wanted to help Africa on its own terms. You know, not to be a puppet of the world, you know, the rest of the world. But I wanted to ask you a question about what about saving face? How it's so important to the Japanese government to save face. What are they going to do now? And with the half-life of nuclear, something like 259,000 years or something like that, how's he going to save face?
They're going to have to put a mask on, a kabuki mask.
According to their plans of their civic community, which I've read, the mayor and the committee that runs the county or whatever, the parish, whatever it is.
The prefecture.
Yeah, the prefecture. Governor. Thank you. The prefecture. Thank you so very much. Anyway, the prefecture has an orderly process of determining what and how they are to either evacuate the site more or... See, you have to put the human factor into it because ultimately they know they're screwed. They've got, I mean, those who are staying are trying to wait it out. And if it is as bad as, or worse.
It's over, Rambo. It's over.
Because the ocean cannot recover as quickly. It's already been saying that down in Australia, that the coral reefs have been destroyed.
Of course they have.
Of course they have.
Listen to me. Have some ideas on how we can get rid of plastic in the ocean. Let us not forget, the radiation will get rid of the plastic.
No,
we did exactly. Our nuclear testing in the South Pacific. We did the atolls.
That's right.
Isn't that where Godzilla came from? Yes,
somewhere
around there. But we used those islands to detonate nuclear weapons in our testing program. So let us. This was what was going on back in the late 50s and early 60s. And yes, this was all going towards the development of the nuclear era for which we are using now as a bully because I got the most nuclear weapons. I can dictate to the world when and how this game will be played because I got all the bombs.
Wow, that should be a soundtrack in a film.
That's from a bully point of view, and it has to be stopped because it's insane. It has a danger point of trying to annihilate everything because you don't want to play by their game. If you're going to equal the playing field, take all the weapons off of the field of honor. Because if you come in with more weapons than what I got, you're going to try to make me and force me at your will because you got all the weapons. No. That's not a fair war. So see how insane that is? Now, if you want to play fair, you want to give everybody a nuclear weapon, go ahead. See, that's stupid too. But the intent to not arm the world should be what we all work for. Because there's a dangerous notion of arming everything to determine who's going to win the war. Stop it. That's insane.
Wow.
We'll be right back.
So did you hear about the Play-Doh?
Meanwhile, Byron. Meanwhile.
Did you hear about the Play-Doh? Hasbro officially trademarked the Play-Doh smell. I don't know if you heard, but...
Aroma Play-Doh.
Don't go trying to imitate the smell of Play-Doh.
Now, okay. They patented the Play-Doh. Can I ask you something, Yana?
Yeah.
Okay, you go out on a date with a guy, it goes well, you get close enough to get a whiff, and he smells like Play-Doh. What's your take? Yana?
Kind of an odd...
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly. He smells like Play-Doh. Go ahead, please, Mr. Guest, I'm sorry.
Well, wait till you hear the description of the aroma.
I'm ready.
So the toy maker Hasbro announced it has trademarked one of the most recognizable aspects of one of its most iconic products, the smell of Play-Doh. The Pawtucket, Rhode Island company announced Friday that the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office has officially recognized the distinctive Play-Doh smell as a registered trademark of the brand, which first hit stores in 1956. Does that predate some listeners?
It predates Byron. No, wait. What year were you born?
Remember my set of Play-Doh toys.
Do you?
I had Play-Doh.
As do I. Yes. It has likely been Play-Doh. The same
I had Silly Putty,
you say 57?
56.
I was 6 years old.
Oh, wow.
I was in the Play-Doh era.
The odor is described by Hasbro. Here comes the nose. Ready? The odor is described by Hasbro as, quote, sweet, slightly musky, vanilla-like fragrance with slight overtones of cherry.
They say too slight too many times. Use vague, throw vague in there.
And the natural smell of a salted wheat paste dough. Sweet, slightly musky.
Sweet dough. Sweet musky dough.
Sweet, slightly musky, vanilla like.
You want to smell like sweet, musky dough?
Overtones of cherry.
Play-Doh.
Salted wheat paste dough.
Sweet. Musky dough.
I must tell you.
And that's what you
sweet,
and
salty.
Yana, that's what you write
musky
in your diary.
Vanilla,
he smelled like
cherry,
sweet musky sweet, dough.
Sweet musky.
But I thought
vanilla,
I'd go out with him again.
Cherry. Sweet.
But I
musky,
must tell you.
Cherry vanilla.
I must tell you that when they came out
salty.
When it came out the decision was it began to entice young children to taste it because of the
because
smell.
Of that sweet musky.
This is interesting.
That sweet musky
and then they
dough
had the,
smell.
That was the original concept, but then there was the anti Play-Doh smell people because their children were getting sick.
Anti Play-Doh smell people.
Getting,
but they changed it so that it began
name,
to
man.
Smell more like wax.
Overtone of cherry.
Wax.
No matter what the color.
Salted.
But take the,
less
take,
delicious
take,
smelling.
Right, test less delicious smelling, but take it out so that it had consistency no matter what the color. It could be rainbow and it would still be the same
smell. The scent
smell.
Of Play-Doh gotcha. Compound has always been synonymous with childhood and fun, said Jonathan Berkowitz, Senior Vice President of Global Marketing for the Play-Doh brand. By officially trademarking scent, we are able to protect an invaluable point of connection between the brand and fans for years to come.
Are they going to make a cologne? With
it sounds Play-Doh? Like they should, right?
Yeah.
I'm telling
that's
you.
That's nasty.
What would you add to all that?
I wouldn't
wear it. I like a little
yeah,
Play-Doh.
You know, they have bacon. They have bacon cologne.
No,
why?
I wouldn't add that to Play-Doh.
My question.
Yeah, come on, I wouldn't add that to
you're
Play-Doh.
Out with a guy. You get
smells
close.
Like bacon. Get away from
you
me,
get close.
Please.
He smells like bacon.
Smells like bacon.
What do you do?
What was
what
last time you bathe?
Do you kiss
okay.
him?
No.
Do you lick
time
him?
To just
no.
leave
do you
and
dip
pretend
him in barbecue
no.
sauce?
Just
what do you do?
Say you're going in the bathroom. Bring your purse with
this
you.
This is not a BLT
Go to the bathroom, bring your purse and leave.
It smells okay. like Play-Doh and bacon. So that's what I would do.
Play-Doh or bacon?
That's what I would do.
Well, let me ask you, Yana, which you prefer?
Just get out of the cab, step away.
It smells like Play-Doh.
Or bacon.
Or a man who smells like bacon.
Say, oh, excuse me. Oh, I think I'm getting sick. Can we pull over? I would just run out of the cab.
Or would you rather
bolt down the block?
Sorry, would you rather have a BLT set?
Hit the run subway. Run out. Jump through the turnstile. Be like, damn, bacon and Play-Doh. I'm out.
Exactly.
Uptown, I don't care
then
where
you go
I'm
on
going.
Instagram.
You have to be immature.
Oh, you think he has to be immature to have like Play-Doh? Cologne?
And bacon smell.
Yeah, bacon smell. Bacon listen, bacon is everything. Some people.
He's immature.
They have bacon soap. They have bacon soap. You can, you know.
That's really? For immature.
They got bacon smoke soap. They got bacon
that's
everything.
That's for immature hand
just
washers.
Google
rye
bacon
soap
product.
Is bacon soap? Or
maybe. No. Bacon soap that smells like bacon. Leave you smelling like bacon.
Come on. You're making that up.
I
come
swear
on.
To you.
It's just for the experience.
Listen.
Hovering over the
you
sink.
You think I'm making it up?
With
okay.
your hands and
I'm
bacon
I'm going to put it on the Facebook
soap.
Page.
That's
I'm
all
put it
it's
on the
for.
Facebook
it's
page.
Not for your lingering scent.
Listen, I got a question.
It's just for
you.
The
yes.
sheer momentary pleasure
yes. if
of
I'm
the soap handler.
The
that's it.
Cologne.
It doesn't stay with you. It's not a cologne.
No, but you just
the bacon.
Like,
the bacon scented
cologne.
He's talking about soap. You're talking
swine.
About cologne.
But I want a question.
You're both
if
talking
I go
about
to Burger
I was just reading about Play-Doh.
And
what
I get
if
a
someone
double
smells
burger,
like bacon and Play-Doh?
Double bacon cheeseburger.
No,
and I got it. And I'm like,
no,
just to prove my point, Byron, read that ad.
Oh, my goodness. Why?
Because yes, Mr. Guest might want to get
bacon
that
soap.
Special someone.
Bacon soap.
Yes.
Here we go.
Here
all
it
right.
is. The most
the real deal.
Realistic bacon soap you'll ever see. No, seriously. It looks and smells just like bacon.
That's right. Only $14.95.
Well, fats are a big part
that's
of soap.
That's right. Well, there it is.
Really? How much money did they make last year?
I mean, it might be worth looking at their books. Because if they made some money, shoot. You know,
depends
another fake and bacon product?
$4 to $15 bar of soap.
Cases are in some storage
like,
unit.
Who pays $15 for a bar of soap?
This would be great because you can have breakfast in the shower. It's all called aromatherapy.
Stop. You're
how many units do we have in that storage?
You can become a vegetarian. But still
how much money
get to enjoy the smell of bacon.
That's right.
Exactly.
This
quarter. What a fix.
Let the pig go.
Yes.
But still, exactly.
You're washing with my bacon?
Exactly.
Bacon aroma.
So I just want to know, like, what about you, Mr. Guest? Like, if a man smells like bacon, what are your thoughts?
I just want to know who made his bacon smell.
That's right.
I wonder if he would cop to eating pork or not.
Ooh. Whether or not that's part of his regimen, I want to know, too. Is it just the perfume, or what?
Yes, a one-time thing, or
it's an aphrodisiac.
Is it a one-time thing?
Like
you just you wearing bacon for the weekend,
you know,
or
never again?
You stepped into the diner.
Your
and
last
the bathroom.
The question
what
of
happened?
The new age will be:
you
do
you
bacon?
Dabbling in bacon?
Do you
bacon?
Which aisle?
Can we make in some bacon? See, it's a good come on line. I don't know. What do you think?
Is that Cartier?
It's a good show to work out to.
Thank you.
You have to scroll down to the bottom for the description there.
DGM.
DGM.
This is amazing.
You with it?
I am so with it.
Yana, are you, wow. do you listen to the music? Do you enjoy the music too?
Very much enjoy your selection.
So how long have you been listening, Yana? Is it a long
not
time?
Sure. It seems like
forever.
You've been on...
Forever.
Yeah, for quite a while, but... yeah, it's got a lot of scintillating angles that other shows don't really delve into.
Okay, I'll take
you have so many great interviews with filmmakers and directors. Very intriguing exposés on film and, you know, the content of the... whole experience or whatever. You know, you're very much a film buff, a film expert.
Huh.
It's interesting. I mean, it's really, you can tell you really know what you're talking about, you know.
What about Byron, though?
He doesn't know. Byron.
Byron doesn't know
goodness.
What he's talking about. Byron has
Byron
no idea.
Byron is from the gut, you know. He's got a gut thing there. He just say it right out. He doesn't mince his words.
Yeah.
He speaks from the heart and the gut, you know.
Speaking truth to wisdom.
Gut-speaking Byron, that's what we call him.
Yeah.
Well, they're finding out that the gut is everything now. Like, your brain hormones
that's
are
right.
made in the gut. And
that's right. And
like
you
your heart has brain cells
that's right.
in it.
You have roach tea.
Kind of weird things.
Roach tea will help your gut.
Yeah.
Yeah, right.
All right, go ahead.
But that's right. Live.
All right, yeah,
but Guy Byron adds a little spice to the whole. I mean, you have your little, you have spice. your back and forth. You know, you have to have your different characters on the show. You can't just. I mean, you could probably do it by yourself, but, you know, it's kind of nice that you can
have some weirdo.
Have some different back and forth, you know.
Byron the weirdo.
The conversation is wonderful.
Yes.
And it tells
yeah.
me, as my writing style, because, you know, I keep, I write this as we do this.
You do?
Yes, like archive.
Don't listen to
and then he tells me what to say,
you.
Too.
All right, and Mystery Guest has something to tell us before we go.
What?
If you want to get someone special, something special,
yeah.
you can get them a deluxe bacon bath grooming kit.
Bath
with bandages,
bacon
mints, bacon floss.
To support WBAI?
Bacon soap,
bacon
picks,
bacon
and
picks.
Bacon lip balm. If that was to support
that's
WBAI,
right.
that's wow.
all the products there. That we should get a
wow.
bacon.
What kind of
bacon package?
There's a website for that.
Man, this
yes,
is bad.
Of course there is.
Just look up bacon products. You can
okay.
get all.
That's right. You thought I was
you
lying.
Get the whole basket.
You thought there was no bacon lip balm.
This is the
there
deluxe.
Is. There are bacon smelling band aids that look like a piece of bacon.
Man, it smells like bacon.
I'm telling you.
Yo, but it
right.
looks.
Yo, baby.
And you wear a t-shirt.
You
can set away from a t-shirt.
Just,
I was healed by the
you
pig.
You just got all this, you know, stuff.
I got letters. You got
big
bacon.
Big fans of a product. And,
well,
you know, there
crazy.
You go.
Crazy.
Go.
Better than Play-Doh, huh?
It's that. That's right. Play-Doh and bacon.
BLT Play-Doh bacon.
Well,
special.
I could see it as like a and micro.
You're tuned to Listener Sponsored Radio.
Yeah.
WBAI. The name of the show.
If you see me walking down the street,
Night Shift. We're here Mondays from midnight till 3 a.m.
Yes.
You can visit us on the web at lifeislikesciencefiction.com. We've got shows going back for over 10 years.
I'm on a few of those shows.
But tonight, we want you to make a pledge.
Right.
The DGM, the music you're listening to, everything that we've played tonight, you can get.
Over
or if you were listening earlier to the movie, you can get Pastor Paul DVD.
Oh, wow. Tell us
$25.
And
you get the DVD. $25 pledge. We send you DVD free.
516-620-3602.
That's right. Just say Pastor Paul package.
Wow.
Or you can go to online. You can do it on your phone. You can do it anywhere. On your iPad, on your notebook, on your netbook, your computer, your laptop, your desktop. Give to, that's the number two, WBAI.org. And just put in Pastor Paul, $25. But here's the real deal. If you're a real fan, you're going to get the DGM, which is a $35 pledge, Spring DGM 2018, and the Pastor Paul, $60. Boom. Boom. Boom.
If you see me walking down the street and I start to cry each time we meet, walk on by. Walk on by. Make believe that you don't see the tears. Just let me grieve in private, 'cause each time I see you, I break down and
were you with that?
Ah, my goodness, my goodness. You know, that takes me back. That's that some takes great
you back.
Music.
Takes you back?
Yes. Dionne Warwick.
Mm-hmm. That's a remix.
I know.
You like that?
But it's still beautiful.
Did you like that, Yana? Were you with it?
Yeah, Burt Bacharach.
Yes, Burt
Bacharach. All right, I'll play something special for you.
I love A House Is Not a Home by Burt Bacharach.
Yes. Oh, Burt Bacharach yes. wrote so many great pieces.
Yeah, what a genius.
Genius. But now here's the deal.
Yes.
$6 Million Man.
Okay. Yes.
You know I love this show.
Of course.
Now, you know, a lot of the music was written by Oliver Nelson.
Wow.
Who is a black jazz musician. And also, you know, wrote a lot of TV theme music.
He did Blues and the Abstract Truth.
Yes, he did. Yes, he did. So, but it's such iconic music. I remember, you know, watching it as a kid, loving the music. Not having any idea that it was a black composer did it. And I love the music. But people have been doing it. They've been redoing it.
Ah.
The themes. So I got to play the best one. The best one.
Okay. Tagging out on the way.
Okay, hold on. This is...
Here we go.
Wow.
That was pretty great.
Now, is that on this?
This is on the DGM. DGM yes, list. It is. Of course.
Oh,
yes, it is. Come on.
Goodness.
Now. That's what the price of admission
DGM.
Right there.
DGM.
Mr. Guest, do you. Mr. Guest, do you know $6 Million Man? Did you ever watch that?
Do you know what?
$6 Million Man.
Oh, well, I know the name. I've heard of it, but I don't really watch television at all too much. I go to movies more, you know.
can't really fault you.
And my husband watches, we watch on the internet too. We watch stuff.
Well, is like he that. Is he a $6 million fan? You should ask
Lee Majors.
Yeah, oh, really? Okay, I've got to check it out. But I like the music.
Oh, it's great.
You like the
But
music.
He did many soundtracks to different shows.
Yes, he did. Yes, Oliver Nelson. And what about you, Mr. Guest? Were you familiar with $6 Million Man?
Well, yeah, I heard the name.
Not you, Jan. I'm talking to the mystery guest.
Oh, mystery, yes. Mystery woman that we never know her name.
That's right.
Yeah, but you see me. You see me running.
That's right.
Running down the river.
Oh, my goodness.
Path.
But she has such a beautiful
with the sunglasses.
Presence, you know?
That's me.
Yeah.
She does have
I'm the one
glasses.
Running. I'm Ooh. Jogging in the park. By the river with the sunglasses. And then I see the car get off with the drug dealers and I go running after them with my sunglasses on. And I find them and that's when we pull them in. You saw
You're
me
the
other day.
There it is.
I mean, that